Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm Chris Prytower. This week's show is going to be about your health. Imagine that you've carefully planned, you've saved enough money, you're finally able to retire financially, but you end up in poor health. Staying healthy not only enables you to enjoy your retirement and live longer, but also reduces your medical expenses. For most of you, next to the taxes you pay and the money you spend on QVC, medical expenses are your next highest expense. And over the life of your retirement, as a couple, you could end up shelling $260,000 of out-of-pocket medical expenses. Surprisingly, the most important thing you can do to remain healthy is not exercise, though that helps. It is your diet. Americans suffer from what is called the Western disease. And when I say Western disease, I'm not talking about the debilitating effects of listening to country music. I'm referring to the fact that we have more incidence of heart disease, cancer, diabetes, arthritis, dementia, and Alzheimer's than any other country in the world. The common link in most cases is not genetics, but diet. So we're not going to turn today's show into an episode of the Richard Simmons Show, but today's show is going to focus on keeping you healthy.
And let me just begin, Chris, with throwing out some stats. As you talked about, we have more incidence of disease. I don't care if it's heart disease, cancer, diabetes, arthritis. 610,000 people die of heart disease every year. That is one in every four deaths. Almost 610,000 will also die from cancer. There will be over 1.7 million new cases of cancer will be diagnosed in the U.S. this year, and the number of cancer deaths are almost 164 per 100,000 men and women. Moreover, more than 100 million, and listen to this figure, and this is why we're going to be talking about diet. Over 100 million U.S. adults are now living with diabetes or pre-diabetes. According to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, they report that 30.3 million Americans have diabetes, or roughly 9.4% of the population. In addition to that, the death rate due to Alzheimer's disease has increased to 55% from 1999 to 2014. And to make matters worse, an estimated 160 million Americans are considered either obese or overweight. Most, with men, 75% of men are overweight, with women, 60% of women are overweight. Now, the common link to all these diseases and weight issues is diet. And the carbs, the sugar, the salt. Let me just have you do something. If you're listening to this program, if you plan on going to the supermarket this weekend, have you ever read the labels of the food you eat? Next time you're in the grocery store, take the time to read the labels of the canned food, the boxed, or the packaged food that you buy. I know everybody's probably familiar with the preservatives. Look at all the chemicals, the salt, the sugars, the food dyes. You are literally putting poison into your body every day you eat these foods. And those foods are directly linked to the weight gains or the major diseases that kill most Americans each year. So what you eat and put in your body matters. If you want to remain healthy, stay trim and shed pounds and become full of energy.
Well, Jim, you'll be proud of me. I removed all the fattening food from my house.
Really?
Yes, it was delicious. But I can tell from the way you're talking about this, Jim, that you do have a strong conviction about this. What got you into health and even to study it the way that you do?
You know, I was pretty good about Chris about exercising, keeping myself somewhat trim. But like everyone else, as I entered into my 50s, I noticed the subtle weight gains. I went from a 32-inch waist to a 34-inch waist, and any time my 34-inch waist pants got a little bit tight, I'd hit the treadmill, hit the gym, and I'd trim myself down. But then eventually, as I got older, I noticed that 34 pants were fitting a little tight. Now, I had a funny story. Now, this was kind of a rude awakening. I can remember going into Nordstrom's, and I was going to get a pair of pants. I usually go in the fall, and I was getting these pants, and I was talking to the salesman. He says, "Sir, what size?" You know, I told him I wanted a navy, I wanted tan, and some gray slacks. And he says, "May I ask your size?" I said, "A 34." And he's kind of stopped, and he said, "Sir, I mean no offense when I say this, but you are no 34. And that was sort of kind of like my wake-up call. But the weight gains, you know, Chris, like anybody else, if you gain enough weight, it led to high blood pressure. And then I had a serious health issue that changed my life. And I began to take my health seriously, not only from exercising daily, but more importantly, the foods I eat. Now, today, I don't eat anything that comes in a can, a box, or a package. All my foods are fresh and organic, and it really started to make a difference in losing weight and maintaining my weight, as well as increasing my energy levels.
And Jim, this is so important. I feel that some of our listeners could relate to some of what you went through. Do you mind sharing with our listeners your own story and the event that did change your life?
Well, Chris, going back early on in the last decade, it was right around 2002, my PSA levels began elevated. They went from normally around 1, they jumped up to almost 3. And my doctor at the time said, "You know what? There is a new program at the University of San Francisco. It is a prostate MRI." So I went up to San Francisco, had a prostate MRI. It came back negative. But despite that, so what he did is he diagnosed it as prostatitis. I took antibiotics. My PSA came down. But over the years, my PSA kept climbing. They'd give me antibiotics. It would drop it down. And Chris, you know, the one thing about being in this business, I knew how to read charts. And so one day I just took all my PSA tests because I'd get them every 6 months, and then they'd put me on antibiotics, and then about a month later, I'd get another blood test, and sure enough, the PSA would come down. And I just started plotting it one day, and I looked at it, and it was a series of higher lows and higher highs. I went to my doctor, and I said, "You know, something's wrong here. This isn't right." And so I went to UCSD, had another prostate MRI. It came back positive in both lobes. And my doctor still said, you know, he didn't believe, Chris, that I had prostate cancer, because he said cancer does not respond to antibiotics. What I had was basically prostatitis. Underneath it was the cancer that was growing. So to make this long story short is I finally got a biopsy, and I can remember receiving the biopsy, and anybody that's had to go through this can understand the feelings that happens when you get that call. I was at the office. It was the day of our Christmas party. My secretary said, "Your doctor's on the phone." And I said, "Tell him I'll call him back later." And he said, "No, he will wait. He wants to talk to you now." And that's when he gave me the news. And I don't know whether being diagnosed with cancer or having to deal with the treatment. Now, I eventually went to Loma Linda. And I interviewed over 30 different, first of all, I read every single book I could, interviewed over 30 men. I interviewed men that had surgery, the Da Vinci machine, had radiation, had cryotherapy, and I chose Loma Linda. And the thing that really changed me was the last day of my last treatment, they called us in the room, and they said, "You know what, we've cured you. But if you leave here and you don't change anything that you're doing in your life, your diet, your exercise, your stress levels, you're going to be back here for something else." And so that was a major turning point And it was sort of what began and got me on this journey, got me into diet, got me into exercise. And it's something that I would recommend because, you know, a lot of us have to take our own health into our own hands. And the reason I'm bringing this up, had I not insisted on that MRI, I would not be here today. And the reason I want to bring this up again, we recently lost a dear client. He died of cancer, and it started with colon cancer that ended up metastasizing to the rest of his body. And he had pains in his legs, and he just kind of shrugged it off. Oh, I'm just getting old. But he never had it examined. And in my own case, had I not done it, I wouldn't be here talking on this show today. And my two favorite authors, Vince Flynn and Tom Clancy of Red October fame, both died within 6 weeks of each other of prostate cancer. And the thing that really struck me was Tom Clancy underwent bypass surgery. You would think if they were checking his vessels in his heart, they would have been checking his prostate. So that's sort of what got me on this road that I've been on health, on whether it's interviewing personal trainers, health technology, diets. Diet plays such a key role in keeping our weight and keeping us healthy.
Now, I know you've talked with and interviewed some of the top diet authors and doctors in the country. What have your studies led you to conclude? I mean, what would you recommend to our listeners who have struggled with the same issues you've had to deal with?
You know, the one thing I found, and especially speaking with so many doctors and so many authors of diet books, is everybody's body and genetics are a little different. I would begin with a complete physical. I mean, it's natural that, you know, you talk to anybody about going on a diet, you should see your doctor first and get a complete physical. Now, I get two physicals each year. I get one with Medicare and I get one with a concierge doctor, which is more complete and more detailed and comprehensive. So once you get your physical, then start with your diet plan. Now, I found that plans that, you know, have you measure the food or the amount of food that you eat or count your calories doesn't work. Here's a suggestion, just by eating only fresh food instead of packaged, canned, or boxed food will not only help you shed pounds, it'll bring down your grocery bill and it's going to make you a lot healthier. Next time you're at this store, look at the shopping store and look at the outer aisles where they have the meat and fish department. And a word of warning I'm going to throw in here on farm fish, and this was just from my own research. The farm fish that you're getting today is not the same salmon that they catch in the wild, like Alaskan king salmon. A lot of the salmon is fed things like grains, and then also they use food dyes to get the colors. So I tend to shop at kind of organic food places, things like Whole Foods, now that they're a little cheaper with Amazon having buy them, or Jimbo's, or we have a sort of a mixed store here called Sprouts. But the produce is better, the meat is natural with no hormones, and the fish is wild caught. The other thing I think you'll find, and this was something I tried, and as many of you know, we've had people that have written books on vegetarian diets, vegan diets. We've had the author of The Blue Zone. And by the way, that was the thing that struck me at Loma Linda, is Loma Linda Hospital is Seventh-day Adventist, and they're vegetarian. Loma Linda, California happens to be one of the five blue zones in the world where they have more centenarians. And that was something that hit me. But I use a company called Green Chef. They have every diet you can imagine. If you're a carnivore, they have carnivore diets. If you're vegan, they have vegan. If you're vegetarian, they have vegetarian, keto, paleo. And it just makes things easy and has allowed me to change my diet. And it just makes it so much easier. In fact, I actually enjoy doing the cooking in the meals that they send you. They're organic, they're fresh, they're tasty, and more important, they're healthy. And believe me, folks, it makes a difference, because when I was on these diets, I was working with my doctor and we were trying to experiment with the body weight, everything from blood pressure, body weight, heart, resting heart rate, blood work, triglycerides, cholesterol, you name it. I've been on this program now for about 6 months, and Chris, when I got my physical this year, my concierge doctor said, you know, this, whatever you're doing, keep it up. He said, you don't even need to come in to see me. My cholesterol's at 150, triglycerides are down, blood pressure's down. Believe me, folks, diet makes a difference.
Well, I'm glad you haven't promoted counting calories. I personally have gotten very good at counting calories. For example, a cream puff has 378 calories. Creme brulee has 551 calories. So I'm good at counting the calories, but after I eat the creme brulee, for example, I notice that I still have the consequence of eating a high caloric food. I do a lot of counting, but for some reason, the act of counting the calories, it just doesn't seem to burn the calories themselves. Anyway, in addition to doctors and diet experts, you've also had film producers, personal trainers, exercise experts on the program. In addition to diet, I know that exercise is important to staying fit and healthy. What do you do to stay fit?
You know, when I was originally trying to get into shape, I was just like any other guy. I was doing weightlifting and I was doing cardio. And what I found is, as everybody knows, I'm a sailor. As I got older, I found that my flexibility and my balance on a sailboat out in the ocean wasn't as good as it used to be. So I've interviewed some of the authors. So what I have done is I have added, I only lift weights 3 times a week. The other 3 times a week, I do Pilates on a reformer, interval cardio. I use a program called Sprint 8. I've actually turned it into Sprint 10, which is interval training, and that has done wonders, not only to bring down blood pressure, but also to bring my resting heart rate down. And then what I do daily is I do Hatha yoga in the morning, and then I do restorative yoga every single night. And the other thing I learned from interviewing Dr. Gary Small, if you any of you know who he is, he's head of the Longevity Center at UCLA's Longevity Medicine Center. He's written several books on dementia and Alzheimer's. And one of the things that really struck me, because I lost my own mother to Alzheimer's, is that it is a lifestyle. 75% is lifestyle. And there's things that you can do to keep your mind active. I used to use a game called Lumosity. Now I'm learning coding on Excel. And you've heard about, people like Warren Buffett or Bill Gates, they play bridge, something that stimulates your mind in a new direction than what you're used to. So you're activating those brain cells. So Chris, I have found that there's, you know, I used to do something simple. It was just weightlifting and cardio. But I broaden that now for flexibility because that becomes more important as you get older.
And for our listeners, I should mention with all of that exercise, you'd think that Jim would look like Lou Ferrigno or maybe The Rock. He actually has just a normal physique. Now, Jim, are there any books that you would recommend to our listeners?
Yeah, in fact, it's going to be our special guest on the program tomorrow. It's called The Big Fat Surprise by New York Times bestselling author Nina Techholz. She'll be our guest tomorrow. Another book I'd recommend, The Plant Paradox by Dr. Stephen Gundry. And by the way, he has been interviewed on the program. So if you just go to Financial Sense, you can listen to that interview. The other one was The Paleo Approach by Sarah Ballantyne and Rob Wolf, and that is considered the Bible for paleo diets. We interviewed them last year, and more recently, How Not to Die by Dr. Michael Greger. And one you will find fascinating is The Blue Zones by Dan Buettner. Two others I'm going to throw out there. We're trying to get these two authors on the program. Total Yoga by Nita Patel and Yoga Over 50 by Mary Stewart. And let me just give you two more because these will surprise you. One is called Ready, Set, Go by Phil Campbell. It is great about stretching, weightlifting routines, plyometrics, the kind of things that are going to keep you flexible. And here's the one that is going to surprise you. It surprised me when I read it. It's called the T2 Method by NFL quarterback Tom Brady. Now, many of you that follow NFL, you know there was a bit of a flare-up between Tom Brady and the coach Belichick over Brady's trainer. And if you read Brady's book, not only is he closer to a vegetarian or flexitarian, is what I call myself, because I still have some meat, but he uses exercise bands. He's not one of those big guys in the locker room, you know, bench pressing 300 pounds. You know, he has to be flexible as a quarterback and has to be fast. He needs quick muscles. And so it was a fascinating book. But here's a guy, Tom Brady, one of the best NFL quarterbacks we've had in history. And he's using a special diet and a special exercise program to keep him in his top shape.
Now, with Tom Brady's book, does his T2 method involve inflating the food? So if you were to sum up your own journey, not only with the issues you overcame from weight to cancer, what would you recommend?
You know, the first thing that anybody will tell you just makes common sense is go get a comprehensive physical, especially detailed blood work. And that was something that I did, Chris, because I wanted to see if, first of all, convince myself that it was diet, that if you did change your diet, it would make a difference in terms of the outcome. So I've tried vegetarian, I've tried vegan, and I'm probably a flexitarian today because
Wait a minute there, Jim. Flexitarian. There you go, bragging about your muscles. I mean, really, Jim?
Well,
flexitarian?
Combination of almost vegetarian with some lean meat. I mean, Chris, when I eat dinner today, I guess the difference between the way I eat today and let's say the way I ate two decades ago is 3/4 of my dinner meal are greens and vegetables. And if you read Tom Brady's book, that's what he eats. That's the way he stays in shape and keeps trim. And only a small, about the size of the palm of your hand, is protein, whether it's a grass-fed beef, whether it's chicken or it's fish. It's a small portion, about the size of your palm. The rest of my plate is mainly greens and vegetables.
By the way, many of the doctors and diet books Jim mentioned are interviews that we've done here on Lifetime Income, and you can listen to them and see what you think. Well, Jim, it's time for our real-life case study, a hypothetical illustration based on real-life examples. Names and circumstances have been changed to protect privacy, and we do have slides online at financialsense.com, which illustrate the points that are being made here. Now, when I say slides, let me be clear that I'm not referring to sliders, which are those delicious miniature hamburgers that have 190 calories and help to further increase your waistline, since we're talking about health. No, I did say slides, and they encapsulate the important points that are made on our show today.
All right. This week is the case. We'll call Brian and Lucy Withers. Brian is age 65. Lucy's age 54. And they both hope to retire between the next year or two. Brian's life expectancy is 86. Lucy's 95. So right there, we have an issue because just between Brian and Lucy alone, there's an 11-year age difference. So that's going to come into play when you think about long-term retirement planning. In life expectancy in Lucy's family, they live in their 90s. And Brian, usually early 80s. So based on their health questionnaire, there was almost a 9-year difference and then 11-year difference in actual age. Their risk tolerance was, like most individuals as they get closer to retirement, it was modest or moderate. Let me give you a little color. Brian is a contractor. He is considering retirement given that he's seen many buyouts and it's involved in another. Retiring soon is an appealing proposition since he wants to spend more time with his wife and friends. live a comfortable lifestyle, and I can sympathize with this. His hobbies are sailing and golfing, so he likes to spend a lot of time outdoors. Anybody playing golf knows that that's almost a 4 or 5 hour endeavor along with sailing. So after some major investment losses, he decided to use an advisor and has been a little bit overzealous on the risk side that he takes. And that was one of the two things that we were going to have to balance between Lucy and Brian is the risk tolerance. Lucy, more conservative. She's worked in the same fine dining restaurant for nearly 2 decades, has built up a network, many lifelong friends. Although she enjoys what she does, she's finding her job difficult to do due to worsening arthritis. She's very healthy and has been given a long life expectancy given her mother, who lived into her late 90s. And check this out, her grandparents both reached the age of 100. So she's concerned about her needs and especially the age difference between the two of them. So there were two issues we had to deal with here. One was age difference and longevity, and the other one was risk tolerance. We put them through our risk program. Their risk score on a scale of 1 to 10 was 3. Their portfolio risk was 7. So clearly, and that was probably more of Brian's doing, since he kind of likes to go for things when the markets are going up, he's all in.
Now, if they plan to maintain the same lifestyle throughout retirement, with Lucy being a waitress, does that mean she plans to take orders from Brian throughout retirement?
I don't know if it's going to work out that way, but we had two real differences here. One was longevity and age difference, and the other one was risk tolerance. Now, what they wanted to do is they were both ready for retirement. They wanted to maintain purchasing power, maintain that lifestyle, but more importantly, manage medical costs because, as we all know, that can get very expensive. Their income was roughly about $150,000 a year. Brian's salary was about a little over 150. Lucy's income was about $60,000. So they had a lot of surplus, over $5,000 a month surplus income. If you take a look at their retirement needs, they thought they could bring that down by almost a third, down close to $100,000. With Social Security mainly coming in for Brian and eventually for Lucy, that would be $48,000. That was going to leave them close to $60,000 short at their retirement goal. Now, they had $665,000 was roughly the value of their house, and their small liability was about $50,000, which was on the sailboat. Brian's retirement assets were about $1.5 million. Lucy's was $1.25 million. Their joint accounts were almost $1 million, most of that in cash, and a lot of that had to do with coming out of some bad investments. That cash figure used to be a lot higher. Once again, the difference between risk-taking between the two. But then on to Brian's credit, he said, look, we wouldn't have these assets had I not invested it more aggressively in the stock market, which was true. But now they're getting to retirement, so we had to strike a balance between the two of them. The important things were cash flow, once again, the risk of longevity, especially on Lucy's part, and then the sequence of risk is, Brian was very well aware, if you listen to the weekend show, we're late into a business cycle. The Fed is raising interest rates, and we know what that eventually leads to. So basically what we did is we set them up in an account with blue chip dividend paying stocks because Brian was almost insistent. He said, look, and especially with Lucy being 11 years younger and also living, her family living up to her grandparents up to 100, there was going to have to be something in there for inflation protection. So we were in dividend paying stocks and a laddered bond portfolio that would produce a grand total of roughly about $120,000 of income versus their budget, which would leave them roughly about $16,000 surplus. Now, we recommended that Brian continued to work for 18 to 24 months. We recommended that both of them update their portfolio, and we made it more conservative and more diversified. The other thing we encouraged Brian to do is sign up for Medicare Advantage plan to keep their costs somewhat predictable. We also suggested that they follow their doctor's advice to take better care of themselves, since prevention is the best medicine. And given Lucy's life expectancy, we advise that Brian delay retirement and taking his Social Security benefits to age 70, because given life expectancy and the age difference, we were talking about, Chris, almost 20 years. So in this case, we were going to have Brian delay receiving his Social Security to age 70, which means if he passes on, Lucy would have his Social Security, which would be 32% higher. So that was pretty much it.
Well, we thank our listeners for joining us today for an issue that is relevant to absolutely everyone. Nina Teichholz will be our guest here on the program tomorrow. Jim mentioned her book, The Big Fat Surprise, and that book did make the New York Times bestseller list, so please join us tomorrow.
In the meantime, on behalf of Chris Prytower and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until we talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertised with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.